Hello, friend. Welcome to the Watery Desho podcast. We are so happy to have the pleasure of your company. If this is your first time listening, sit back, relax. We hope you enjoy. If you are coming back because you enjoy our content and you'd like to support us, you can go to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/WateryDesho. We've got all kinds of fun rewards and bonus content like early access, Discord roles, additional audio and video content, all in three budget-friendly tiers. If you're not able to support us financially, no biggie, we totally understand. If you'd like to help us out for free, you can always give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, which helps our discoverability. You can follow us on SoundCloud, on Twitter, at WateryDesho. You can always send us an email at WateryDesho@gmail.com if you want to correspond with us. We may not get to read every correspondence on the show, but I can promise you that we do read and try to respond to every single one, because we do love our community, which we hope you'll be a part of. Thank you for your kind attention, friend, and without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, welcome, ladies, gentlemen, and NBs. It's Watery Desho, Stream of Thought, Season 6. What is Shadon doing? That looked a little bit lewd. Keep that to yourself.
No. Oh, come on. He's fist pumping. What did you think I was doing,
Keep those football hooligan cheers away.
I mean, come on, I've been called a wanker many times in my life, but right. You don't need to make it literal.
Hello, Plombo. Hello, everyone out there.
Indeed, hello.
I'm the subtle doctor, the wonderful chap that you heard a moment ago, if you're new to the thing, is my buddy, my friend, Viking at heart, and in real life on Saturday nights. Shaden.
Oh, I wasn't pillaging or plundering this Saturday just gone, I'll tell you that for free. I was quite inebriated, though. Hopefully no one brings that up anytime soon on the stream. What the hell were you doing with your pants on your head? That didn't actually happen, by the way. At least not far as I remember, and I'm going with plausible deniability. Pleading the fifth.
No judgment here, my friend. hello, Sophie. Welcome. All right. We're talking about Vinland Saga, and as such, because this is what I like to do, I've been working on my Viking accent, all right? Last week I came in, you told me I was wrong, so I've been working on my Viking accent for real. All right, here we go. This is me as a Jom Viking. Is it Jorm or Jom?
Do you want me to put that up as a poll?
I can't remember.
We'll crowdsource our answer on this one.
There's a factual answer. Anyway, this is me. This is my Viking, all right?
Arr, here I be, doing the Viking impression. It's pretty good, eh, matey? You gotta like, high sea shenanigans and, talk about landlubbers and scurvy, and that's the Viking speak, right? I've got the vernacular down. Am I right?
Can I just say, right, you're like whenever you use, say, an image editing program, you get a slider that goes from, like, black to white. I think that between Viking and Pirate, you're still a bit too close to Pirate.
Damn.
You might want to just bring the slider a bit to the right.
All right.
But if Vinland Saga is able to go by, though, your actual real fault here, Doc, if Vinland Saga is able to go by, is that you don't actually sound Japanese.
isn't that just the Pirate? No, what are you talking about? That's not what pirates sound like. At all. Isn't a pirate more like, I'm over here, I'm downloading wares right now so that I don't have to buy anything. I've downloaded it all to my share. Secret
Ladies
mega.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is Doc's audition for Revenge of the Nerds 3 there. Please feel free to give him a role.
No.
Universal Pixar rolls the rights to that particular franchise.
All right, I'm going to work and I'm going to get this Viking accent down. I'm telling you. So that's a pirate. And my first one was Australian. I'll figure this out eventually. But in the meantime...
So can we expect Cockney next week, then? Just
perhaps.
Guessing. Yeah, just guessing.
I never know, like, what the... I'm really bad about, like, the dialogue. Dialects. Like, I can't pick out... Apart from, like, there's, like... I can pick out the Liverpudlian, and I can pick out maybe, like, the Geordies. But that's basically it. Like, the London stuff, like, I don't know. You could be from anywhere. You could be...
I admittedly shouldn't be judging Doc on any of this here, because my ability to do accents is awful. It's completely wretched. Like, I'll try to be Irish, and I'll be Scottish, and I'll try to be Scottish, and I'll be Irish. So, I'm not going to judge here.
Right. Those are... That one, I mean, my stupid joke aside, where I'm doing bad, like I'm doing the wrong impression on purpose, the Scottish and the Irish is one where the slider gets messed up for me also. Like, I'll start on one and veer into the other. It's bad news. And then you got the Northern Irish, which is sort of different. Anyway, bad geography and jokes that don't land aside. Speaking of things that don't land, Viking ships, right? They're not in the land. They're in the what? They're in the water, not land. They're not.
Well, there's a boat.
Landing.
So I hope it's. Oh,
a lot. So Vinland Saga, episode two. Episode two.
Before we do that, actually, we should probably do a quick bit of housekeeping. Yep. Actually, just a couple of things we should mention. So we're going to get some more serious stuff out of the way first. You might be aware that we're not currently restreaming this to Twitch. If you don't know why we're not restreaming this to Twitch, because currently there is a kind of worldwide boycott going on against Amazon Prime and their Prime Day sales, because if you've heard anything about the conditions Amazon warehouse workers in, they are pretty shocking. I mean, when you're getting your time missing, you're potentially lose your job because you have the audacity to go and actually go and have a bathroom break. Yeah, that's not ideal working conditions for anyone. I mean... I know Amazon is supposedly good at delivering things on time, but they really are, you know, in the past. I mean, what next? They're going to start hiring people as fucking chimney sweeps here. But you would be right in also observing, wait a minute, we are currently covering Vinland Saga, a show that is airing on Amazon Prime. So here's the thing, right? You're not wrong for pointing that out. We do still want to cover the show, but we are going to do our bit, at least in not restreaming to Twitch. And if you feel that that is insufficient of us, you know, that we shouldn't be flat out talking about Vinland Saga at the moment while this is going on, then that's perfectly within your purview to do so. But nonetheless, we are of the opinion that you should be supporting Amazon workers by not buying stuff off Amazon today or otherwise using their services if all possible. And the reason we're doing it is more because we want to, you know, celebrate Vinland Saga for how good it is rather than, you know, give any credit or due, you know, accolade to Amazon. So we thought we'd just address that just to point out that, yes, probably hypocritical of us to be doing this, but we are at least going to do something to address that.
Yeah. I think we both watched the episode anyway for the first time last week. So I wish I could say that was the only time I watched the episode. I did watch it today before I actually knew about the strike happening. It's just not a thing that's front of mind. I know that for a lot of people this has been... We've been building up to Prime Day, and the Amazon strike has been a date circled on the calendar. That was not the way it was for me, but early this morning, I rewatched Vinland, and then later in the morning, I find out this was happening. So I wouldn't have rewatched it, and because, you know, I have had a chance to watch it before now. Like, I'm sure most people have, but like you say, I mean, we actually, you know, whatever the case, we are still talking about a thing that's airing on Amazon, so... Yeah, I mean, hypocrites, I guess we'd be, will not restream to Twitch. Ignore the Twitch link here. It's not actually a hyperlink, at least. So this is just making you aware of our Twitch channel, which you could go to later. Stand with the workers. We totally support that. If, you know, I have some stuff that I've got to purchase from Amazon, but won't be doing it today or tomorrow. Gonna be waiting till after this is over, and we'd encourage you to do the same, to stand in solidarity with those employees and do your part to sort of help them fight for better working conditions.
Yeah. You said it, Doc. Right, so that's the more serious side of things out of the way, but let's talk about our podcast very briefly here. So you might have noticed we recently started a Patreon, and I just wanted to say first off that I am actually kind of legitimately blown away by this Bogomolie Hallipage. I thought it was going to be desolate. Like, from like it's only been up for a week and we're already got more than 10, and that is incredible. So to everyone who's subscribed to our Patreon so far, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for doing that. That really means a lot. It means a lot that you have the confidence to actually pay, you know, us to continue doing our work and see support it, to actually, you know, put finance behind it. So now its onus is on us to up our game and deliver on that. Which leads me to my next point. I am very pleased to report that I have actually finished just earlier today the Shield Hero script. It's done. It's nearly 10,000 words long. Holy crap, I had a lot to say on it, and I was very angry throughout most of it, you'll be pleased to hear. There is quite a lot of profanity in it. If I were doing an actual video recording of it, I'd probably frothing at the mouth through much of it. So I'll be working on recording that this week, and hopefully having it out at the weekend or the early part of next week. If you do want to catch that early as you can, that's where you'll get it through Patreon via us, so do feel free to subscribe to that to get hold of it. Mm-hmm. I believe that'll be behind the $5 tier. Is that correct, Doc?
Shield Hero will be in the $3. So if you're
$3, there you go. Yep. $3 if you want to hear me lose my shit over a terrible show.
If you're in the $5 tier, of course, you will get it as well. But but it's only the $3 tier for early access to this Shield Hero essay. We do want at some point the wider world to be able to know of Shadon's hate, so at some point in the future it will go public. I'm not sure when. We have not talked about it, but be the first to hear it and subscribe and all that good stuff. There's plenty of great benefits. I just want to take this moment to like wag a finger now at, listen, this is probably bad form because you're subscribing to our Patreon, right? You're paying us money and here I am chastising you. But I just want to take a minute. You out there, do you know who you are?
Mirror.
Have, you know, paid, pledged to pay money to us on the Patreon, and you haven't joined our Discord yet.
Yeah,
you make me sad.
If you have subscribed to us, do feel free to join Discord if you wish. We're very good to have you all there.
Listen, no, this is a demand. You have to join. This is a... You absolutely... No, I kid. Look, we would love to have you there.
Are you going to, like, go down the street on a Viking longboat and get off and just, you know, force them, you know?
I will show up at your house with the fucking helmet on.
You're drawing inspiration, aren't you, Doc?
Totally. But, totally. But no, but I don't know if people just don't know about it or they don't want... I mean, look, there... To be fair, there are a million... of these kind of services that are like join our Discord, so people might be a little discorded out. I would understand, but I myself am not really super active in any Discord community, so whenever I am on Discord, and I'm trying to be on more frequently, I will be there. So if you want to talk to me, or Shadon or Vorg, they're there pretty often as well.
Indeed,
we are here. We take questions about the shows or just talk whatever. Maybe at some point in the future we'll like schedule some patron voice chats or whatever as a reward. We'll figure that stuff out.
We will. But for the moment, once again, thank you to everyone who subscribed so far.
Bless you. You guys
haven't
rock.
Already, take a look, see if it strikes your fancy, and if you're interested, do feel subscribed for all that content and more that will be coming up soon. Lastly, is now a good time for us to do the polls from last week before we go into the episode 2?
Yeah, let's do polls and then let's talk about the director and the summary.
Indeed. All right, so Vinland Saga, episode 1, poll 1. Is Canada the place where dreams come true?
Because they're going to Canada.
This is actually a an almost perfect 2-3 split here. We've got 2-1. I mean to say, we have 67% yes, Viva Vinland, and we have 33% saying nah, it's fine, but nah.
Dreams come true is a little strong. It's a little strong, but I didn't want to make it.
I'm sure there are many Canadians who would disagree with you.
I didn't want to make it a poll about hating Canada or loving it. Because that seems poor taste. So
I can't wait to see our view figures for Canadians next month. Like, you go geographically and it'll just be a big fat zero.
Probably.
Damn it, Doc.
Sorry.
Damn it, Doc.
I love every person I met from Canada. They're all incredibly charming. And it's a government that I wish that I was a citizen of right now, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. Well,
rather than America.
Anyway, we'll leave that aside, but let's carry on with the second one.
Okay.
This one's a very nice outcome for this poll, and you'll know exactly why I'm saying that in a second. Is Leif Erikson a junkie? 69% yes. Said he's on that pipe 24/7.
Yes.
So we literally got the 69-420 blaze answer. Well done, folks. You've done us proud here. I'm genuinely impressed. And then we have, of course, me 31% saying, nah, you go anytime. Anytime's fine. It's fine.
He's in total control. There was a great... I wish I could find it, but there was a tremendous quote tweet by Daniel and Lyons, or Daniels and Lyons on Twitter, I believe is the handle. He quote tweeted the poll and said that next Leif Erikson day, we're going to have to get some of that good in honor of our boy. It made me laugh a lot. That was exactly what I was going for.
reviving that 1,000-year-old tradition.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. That's some good Leif Erikson.
So stupid. I love it.
I have no shame. You know
God.
This already. You all know.
I love
you
it.
All know that I have poor taste, poor jokes, poor mannerisms, you know, poor head of hair. I could go on. Anyway, that's the polls for last week. So thank you for everyone who took part. There will be more mm-hmm. coming along as we go through episode 2. But for the moment, I'm going to pass the baton back over to Doc, who's going to lead us through both the director and the staff. And then we're going to talk about the actual plot of the episode itself before going on to the usual summary. So take it away.
All right. Caught it. All right, there we go. So
Nice.
Vinland Saga Episode 2, Sword, Ken. It's called in Japanese. You know, written by, as is every episode so far that's been released, has been written by head writer Hiroshi Seko, who we've talked about on this and other last episode and also other episodes that were about Banana Fish. And the Mob Psycho episodes that are in our feed. We've talked about him at length, but the episode direction this time has been done by Yoji Sato. And Yoji Sato's CV is pretty small. Not a lot of like really high-profile stuff. He has basically been just an episode director, occasionally doing some storyboarding. By occasionally, I see 2 storyboard credits and about 15 episode director credits. And it's only 1 or 2 episodes, it appears to me. On one show that I can't pronounce, he's directed 3 episodes. But most of the time...
Very for hire, it seems, yeah.
Uh-huh. Most of the time, like his highest profile shows, he did Victorian Romance Emma. The second season of that, he directed episode 10. He's directed a random episode of the 3rd season of Phi Brain, Kami no Puzzle, Puzzle God Phi Brain. Did an episode of Psycho Pass, 2 episodes of Psycho Pass, 15 and 21. I think that's the penultimate episode, 21, if I'm not mistaken.
I have seen Psycho Pass, but I can't recall. So it's been a while.
So yeah, that's our episode director, you know. Very, you know, been around the block.
Experienced, though. And...
Yeah. Yeah. But not much else I have to say. If anyone, you know, of course, ever has any more insights to these folks, let us know. So, yes, welcome, Felix. You have just made it. And we are just getting into episode talk. Everything up to this point has been housekeeping and polls. So here we go with the summary of Sword Episode 2. I have outlined my summary numerically. And the first line I have is simply number 1 in the word bath. Just bath.
I thought it was going to be one of those like step 1, bath. Step 2, murder everyone. Step 3, question. Step 4, profit.
Right. That would be accurate.
Yeah.
I think never bathe on a set schedule, I feel like, is the lesson from this. Just bathe at random.
This was a Vinland Saga's playing with the boys scene, basically. At least up until the All-Star Game murdered.
Oh, man, it was. The English showed up, and the Yom/Yorm Vikings, I can't remember if it's Yom or Yorm, were doing community bathing like they always do on Saturdays. And some spearmen showed up, impaled the men. Horse riders came into the village, set it on fire. They were meant to not leave anyone alive. This is very cheery to talk about. These mm-hmm. are Englishmen doing this. And cut from there to, I think, the kids playing war.
Before we go any further, I have to say I take significant umbrage with this depiction of my people, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why this makes me so angry seeing mm-hmm. the English depicts this way, because it assumes that any Englishman would ever get up early on a Saturday morning.
No,
that's not even remotely true.
I love that is the bullshit. Thing that you
bullshit,
pick out.
Absolute
yes.
bullshit.
That's the inaccuracy. They're always shafting people without consent. It's true. It's a no-no everywhere, but especially in the Bath. It turns out that Leif is leafing. Mr. Erickson is leafing the village. to go trade furs for wine. He needs wine for he and his Catholic friends, presumably, to celebrate a Christian holiday.
Well, in the interest of making bad puns, I don't know why he needs to go anywhere, because Thorfinn has plenty of wine already.
Yes. It's so true. During this scene, we've got, Thorfinn mad that he can't go with Leif to go trading, makes some funny faces, and then we see Leif get this sort of interesting look in his eye and do the whole, like, movie thing, you know, where he's, like, slowly puts the phone down.
I'm sorry, but when you said that, you made me think of Bad Boys, when Martin Lawrence just goes, "This shit just got real."
Where he, like, there's something incredibly urgent that needs to be communicated, but it's communicated entirely too casually. Like, "Thorfinn, go tell your dad a warship is coming." "What?" "There's a warship coming." Thorfinn looks out. "Oh my god, you know, there's this urgent thing," and he runs to get his dad. And we have the Thor's comedy hour taking place over in the welding shop. He's trying to make a metal bowl, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
He has apparently been applying too much strength to the process, and it has a hole in it. He's like, bowl is good. It's good, master. We try it. And they're like, "Give it a try." And, of course, it's leaking.
I didn't
they're
realize
all laughing
Force was also a caveman, but hey, here we go.
Yeah. Bowl, round, has hole.
Let's just start doing this.
So that's happening. Thorfinn comes up and says, dad, worship. So Thor's is alerted to the idea, but before he can get there, we cut back to the shore and we see the Illuminati warriors with the fucking eyeballs on their axes. Either that or they're CBS employees. I don't know which. But the Illuminaxi are there, and they are...
Jesus mm-hmm. Christ.
I did that. It was bad. I'm suffering right now inside because of it. They and their leader, Floki, again, first Viking DJ, Floki. When I hear the name, like, I always, like, in my brain cut to, like, are you familiar with Underworld's Born Slippy?
No.
Like, dry boy, dog boy, dirty numb angel boy.
Oh,
yes, from the train spotting.
Of course.
The techno classic. Yes. Yeah. That always just cut to, like, a record scratch, and then that. I think in the Fatboy Slim remix, there is, like, some record scratching. Record scratching.
I hope you're not scratching no Richard.
No, thank you, Doug.
Sorry.
So, right. They say, Floki and others are like, yo, we, the Jorms Vikings, are here. Jorms Vikings, are here because we want Thor's the Troll.
I'm so sorry, but I laughed my ass off this because I thought, what, has Thor's been doxxed? Is that why they've turned up? Has he been shitposting on Reddit again?
Yes, exactly.
Is that why they found it?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we traced your IP. We had your ISP give us your IP, and here we are.
Can I also just
stop
say as well,
torrenting?
Can I also just say as well, because again, my headcanon is awful, I thought that's like the second time in two episodes they've had someone arrive by boat and start to like ominously threaten them. So, you know, day three or episode three, we're just going to end up with the D-Day landings happening.
No, yeah, I know, it is. And you know, well, that's really interesting that you actually brought that up, because, I mean, we all. Japanese history was forever changed when Commodore Perry, I can't remember his first name, it's not Matthew. That's what I always think of when I think of Commodore Perry. It's not good. Commodore good. Matthew Perry. But Commodore Perry showed up with the iron ships on the harbor of Japan and demanded to, you know, trade with them. And at that point, Japan had only seen like wooden ships, and seeing these like black death gods spewing smoke run by steam engines like approach their harbors and show up on harbors that are only made for like their shogun show up. And it's one of the things that precipitated ultimately like the fall of the shogunate and the Meiji Revolution. But that's like one of those, you know, a lot of times we think about like World War II and the dropping of the nukes in a modern sense, like things that are really etched into the Japanese mind, Japanese like social consciousness in recent history. But also the landing of those ships is another big one. And so the fact that they're depicting that here, like, it's not like necessarily, I mean, it is pretty freaking ominous, right? I mean, it's not something I guess they haven't seen before, but it kind of is. Even though they they have like their own warship frozen away, it's like, oh my god, like, here's this warship that's actually working, and these dudes with axes, and they're just showing up, and like, and it changes the course of history for this little village forever.
I mean, it's a warship showing up. It's not like having an Uber driver arrive outside your door. You know, usually they're there for a pretty serious reason, and indeed that is true, as we find out shortly once Floki actually sits down and talks to Thor's.
So Sophie says restoration and not revolution. I've heard it called both, but yeah, no, it is like restoration's probably the better word, because full power was restored to the Emperor, and that was the main kind of idea behind the revolution, is people like they saw the shogun as like, ah, oh, like the shogun's being, I'm simplifying a lot here, but oh, the shogun is, you know, being too soft with the foreigners and letting them in, and there's all this foreign influence and so much trading. But like, you have like Satsuma and Choshu, those the daimyo from there were like, love the emperor, kill the foreigner or expel the foreigner. And so the revolution was restoring the emperor, restoring political power to the emperor. But that was very much a name only thing. There were still some like other people around the emperor that were like really ruling, but just the shogun didn't have all the political power that he had previously held. Anyway, this is not about fucking late 19th century Japan or mid 19th century Japan. Vinland Saga, here we go, the rest of the business. So it turns out, from Hez CVS employee Floki, we hear that his leader, Les Moonves, no, it's Sigvaldi, I think is he's called. He wants, I'm not sure if he's like a king or just the head naval officer or what, but they are, because the English have taken out this settlement or contingent of Viking people, that we saw at the beginning. And maybe this is happening a lot and we just see one instance of it. The leader of the Vikings is like, we need to like recruit more into the army. We need to get more troops.
Yeah.
Hey.
Well, the specific reason actually is also mentioned here that one, like the king, the sister of the queen was at that village and was murdered.
Oh.
Yes. Mm. So that's all the incentive or reason they need now to, you know, decide, right, well, England, prepare to bend over and prepare to receive some Viking justice.
Right. And, you know, Sigvaldi is saying, look, even people like this fucker, Thor the Troll, who deserted us 15 years ago, you have the privilege of re-entering the Navy honorably. Because it's established this episode, they hate deserters, they don't forgive them, it's bad, but, so we have Floki saying, look, you can come back in, despite the fact that you've deserted, but...
insert your own commentary here, by the way, about someone named Floki, tempting Fors into, you know, doing something that he doesn't really want
to do. It's like, oh my gosh, it's, yeah. Will he fire some kind of arrow that sets off Ragnarok? I wonder.
Oh God.
So like, oh, but that's an apt comparison, right? I mean, it's low hanging fruit. It's here to be made. This allusion to the Norse gods, and you know, I painted it a minute ago as like they're offering Thor's the chance to come back in, and they're saying this is a choice that you can do. Really, there's very much not. This is an implicit threat, right? I mean, we have the three boys, including Thorfinn, watching this conversation through the door. They get scared away. Mm-hmm. And then you have Floki saying, like, this is a nice village. You can tell by the children. They've never had a taste of war in their lives. Until today. And, like, you can see Thor's saying, well, yeah, okay, I read you.
Gears are grinding in his head. He knows where this leads. He's not an idiot. Especially given we later see the soldiers from the Viking longboat are actually now marching through the village, taking up position. Now, what do you reckon they might do if otherwise ordered? I mean, they're not, you know, gathering around just because they're positioning themselves like they're starting to LARP or anything like that. You know...
Oh God, I'm choking on my Diet Coke.
You're putting the dye in it.
Oh yeah, putting the dye in Diet Coke. Oh, thinking about them LARPing is hilarious. Yes, that's good. We're not really Vikings. Just act scared of me. This is a role play. You can come next week. Like, the look of madness in that one dude's eyes was pretty freaky. Like, just whenever the anime, like, cuts and also quickly pans up and you see, like, a face of a guy with, like, really tiny pupils, you fucking know. You fucking know, right? So, that was scary. But the kids are very much, like, ecstatic, right? About, oh, we're going to war, fuck yes. Like, the romance of war is alive and well in this village, who's, of course, never seen it. I'm obliged to insert here the comment that if you watched this episode, I can't remember if I said this last week, I don't think I did, but if you watched this episode and you like this setup of... Well, here we have a group of kids that has kind of been taught that war is this romantic thing. They play war all the time. They only think of it as a way to become, like, to earn valor and glory and prestige. And it's this great thing. It's a very romantic notion and not the, like, cruel, dehumanizing, you know, destructive force that we all know it to be. there is an anime, if you want all of that, but set in the future, Gundam 0080 War in the Pocket, I can give a hard recommend for. This is written by the same person that wrote Wings of Oniamis. Either written or directed by the same person.
I haven't even seen that, but on the base of that alone, I can also give you a hard recommend on that, because Wings of Oniamis was, barring a certain 2 minutes, mm-hmm. 2 or 3 minute scene, absolutely magnificent from start to finish.
But it's very much that, as the main character is Alfred, and he starts the anime like in a class of kids. It's like, oh, war is so cool, it's the greatest thing, and because war is erupting in space. I think it's just started, because I believe, well, anyway, it doesn't matter. And you don't have
clearly to... never listened to any Edwin Starr, unfortunately.
you don't have to have a knowledge of really anything about Mobile Suit Gundam, honestly. I mean, it helps if you know, like, okay, there's these Zeon people from space, and they want independence, and they're fighting against the Earth Federation. That's really all you need to know to go into it and enjoy it. I would totally recommend that. And that's what this episode reminded me a lot of, actually. And this is a great show, that one of my favorite Gundam things, 0080. The kids think it. This is this amazing thing. And the Floki gets on his ship and announces, hey, like, this is what's going to happen, yo. Tors is going to go to war. And you all can go with him if you can cut it. You can go on a ship. Our people want him to have one ship. Do the celebration dance, because that's wartime, fools.
And Force, I will meet you on the battlefield, he says, which, in light of what happens later in this episode, is probably a more ominous line than you would think.
Right. Oh, God. Yes, Floki.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't say what side he's going to be on that battlefield.
No, it's true. It's so right about that. There's this incredible scene... where, and again, God, it so reminded me of War in the Pocket, but when he announces this, and the crowd kind of sits there for just a moment, absorbing it, and then someone's like, we're going to war, motherfuckers! And then everyone's like, woo! And then you see Thor's, like, looking down and walking off dejected, the only person doing that. Like, so good! I love that scene. Love it. Tremendous. And you gotta know Thorfinn is probably watching, and he's very confused, right? Because on one hand, he and his buddies have been playing war, and war has been this great thing. His dad has a war chest he suddenly found, and he's gonna go off to war. Dad, isn't this great? Oh, you look like you're the most depressed you've ever been in your life. But shit.
I mean, sorry, getting so chesty here, but one thing to note as well is that it seems from Thorfinn's reaction that he didn't know about his father's heroic heritage, like the things he had done, like the title he had of being the troll, which, by the way, not referring, of course, to, you know, him having frequented Reddit or 4chan, but rather instead showing like a kind of brute strength, like a mythological creature, a force of nature even.
Yeah. Zoe. God damn it. Sophie. What is the matter with me? I should quit right now. I am an old person already at 35. I passed my prime. I peaked years ago. Sophie.
Just to respond to Sophie's comments as an actual British person, I will say that given how long the average manga does run on for with no end in sight, that's probably more accurate than you realize.
Zexit is a fantastic... That is a fantastic joke. I'm so happy that these worlds have collided to create this joke. All right. Pressing on. So,
before we get to the war chest, something we need to mention as well is that early in the episode, the kids were even actually doing play fighting early on, which Thorfinn got killed, quote-unquote, quite early. Mm-hmm. But he was obeying the rules of the game, as it were. However, after the, you know, arrival of Floki and then his subsequent departure and everyone being psyched up for war, the kids get engaged in another play fight again. But this time, Thorfinn, like, even when he is killed, quote-unquote, he gets back up and beats the shit out of everyone.
Yes, he does.
This will be important later for something I'm going to talk about. Okay. It's worth knowing that this happens even before he goes to the chest. Like, he's got, like, his wooden shield and his wooden sword, but for him, the playtime is over. It's time to, you know, get real, get serious, which, coming from a six-year-old, is... I can see exactly why he's... I mean, he's an impressionable six-year-old kid, as I said last time. But, well... Yeah, good luck with that, Thorfinn. There are a couple of issues here.
Okay.
One particularly vertical issue, mainly.
Right, right.
Just...
We have... Thor's before that whole scene you're talking about, he's talking, I think, with Leif, and his wife Helga's there, and he's saying, this is an important scene to me, that he believes it's time he took responsibility, right, for, and he doesn't say this outright, but for deserting. He feels guilty for it, mainly, I think, feeling guilty for dragging the villagers into mm-hmm. this whole ordeal. And I will talk about that when we get to our discussion section. Then we reach the scene where, yeah, Thorfinn breaks a kid's arm. He's feeling very restless. He's feeling a lot of conflicting emotions because his dad... I mean, just so many reasons. This is what I want to talk about also and ask you about, like, why he's wigged out and feeling the ways he's feeling. He finds a dagger in the weapons cache inside the unlocked weapons chest.
Nah, Thorfinn's been working on his lockpicking skill. He ranks 100 on it. You know, he's properly assigned his talent tree.
I've
come... I will say, by the way...
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I've come to... I've been told there have been some similar instances in... media I've been watching lately where I've been thinking, why is this drawer, door, cabinet, or whatever unlocked? And it's very much, you know, the Japanese respect personal space to such a degree that shame is meant to be a deeply ingrained inhibitor for you opening someone's door without their permission or going through their stuff. So that's, I think, probably... at least partially explains why there's no lock on this chest full of incredibly deadly weapons.
By the way, yeah, Thorfinn pulls out a dagger, which presumably is going to be one of the ones he will use when he's older, as evidenced by the OP. What I appreciate that by, though, and yeah, I know these are Viking ruins or Nordic ruins, but it just looked like, you know, it had 2 hours, like this way up. You know, you stab him with this
know,
in this direction.
Yeah, it's true. So... he finds this dagger in particular, and he pulls it out slowly of the sheath, and it's glowing. It's got this glint, and, you know, Thorfinn, it's like, wow, this is beautiful. And Thor, of course, grabs it, and his hand starts bleeding. And, you know, people might wonder, like, oh, that seems a little overly dramatic, right? Why? What's the need to do that? Why don't you just take it from him or ask him to give it to you? It's my own opinion that he wanted to associate the symbol, right, with the dagger. He didn't just want Thorfinn seeing this beautiful thing of war and then having to put the beauty away. He wanted to be like, look, you bleed. This makes people bleed. When you think about this dagger, I want you to think about bleeding and how easily it cuts and how fragile human skin and flesh is when it comes to these things. And he says, like, a sword is a tool for killing. Who are you planning to kill? And this is amazing scene, I think.
I love this bit. This was so magnificent because it was such a perfect demolition of this whole, like, you know, militaristic fetishism that you find not just in that time, but in even modern day.
Yes.
Given how eager people are seemingly to go, well, like, oh, we want to go off to fight the enemy.
The enemy. And who is your enemy? Thor asks his son, and his son doesn't really have an answer, but he throws out the first shithead he can think of, Hofudan-san. And Thor's, you know, hands on shoulders. He's like, look, son, you don't have any enemies. Nobody has any enemies. And this is a really profound thing to tell a six-year-old in that kind of culture who's in this situation. Mm. And so he understandably, Thorfinn shoots back at Thor. It's like, what are you talking about? You're going to war tomorrow. You're going to go fight the enemy.
Yeah. What do you mean? Why do you get Sko and I don't?
Yeah.
What gives you the right to do what I can't? Why do you get to tell me what to do?
Like, you're babying me. I know you're just trying to baby me and protect me and lie to me because I'm a little kid. And Thor's can't say anything because, like, his hypocrisy has been pointed out and he's been called out for it, and it's true. I mean, he could go into this explanation. I'm doing it to save the village, and but, you know, he's a quiet guy. And
I don't even think Thorfinn would have believed him then. Speak that too. Honest.
Yeah, what would be the point in some ways? At that point, once Thorfinn's asleep, Thor's meets the rising sun, he and Leif. And they say, you know, it's a good day to die. No, it's beautiful. Odin has blessed the day. This is a good day to set off sailing. And then we cut to the Faroe Islands, on which, you know, we see another group of men who are not the Illuminaxi. It is Askeladd's forces being basically just a gang of children, almost, like, just brutalizing this Christian priest.
Use him as target practice for axe throwing.
Like,
and he said, and what the guy says, a line which I just found incredible, which was, "If you dodge, I'll kill you." And I'm like, so if he doesn't dodge, he dies. So you'll die, or you'll die.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you want to try rolling that by me again? You know, Poindexter. Why don't you just kill him? Like, you know, this is the worst choose your own adventure novel ever. What choice do you want? Death or death?
Neither of those.
No. No, neither. If I could, yes. Please.
It's like when No, I won't do it. I won't go down the rabbit hole. Stop it. Stop.
Avoid that.
Talking about the Sonic the Hedgehog 2006 fan dub by Snapcube. Don't talk about it.
No. Just let's pretend you didn't say that.
Yep, pushing us. So, Floki peeking through the curtain at this brutality and a dude's puking into a barrel and shit. And say, well, Askeladd, your men have no class. And, I think one of them actually walks up to the contrasting, like, regimented, uniformed line of Floki's men just standing there looking forward. They're, you know, the idea is, like, they are disciplined. These other assholes are not. And Askeladd says, no, we're just bored, and we also hate Christians. So what do you want? And the episode ends with Floki saying, I'll pay you such and such if you kill Thor's. Cut to credits. That's the episode.
Floki, a character named Floki working to assassinate a character named Thor's.
Yeah.
I see no parallels to, you know, ancient myth or anything like that. None whatsoever.
When does Baldur show up? That's what I want to know.
Well, God, this will be the first time I'll have watched a Japanese anime where Hink Horny will actually have some actual fucking relevance to the thing we're watching.
Oh my God. That's right. Franks did the references. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sweet Jesus. Rather just being there to show how good your Wikipedia foo is.
That is what it is. Okay, so we're gonna get to the discussion. Shadon's gonna kick it off here after I take a momentary break. So we'll be right back.
BRB.
Ikuzo.
Okay, we're back.
Hello, everyone.
Thanks for sticking with us. So let's get into the talking points, Mr. Shaden.
With pleasure. So, first thing I want to bring up, let's talk about how you use how you use framing and the rare occasion where it's actually a genuinely good idea to tell rather than show. So, go back to the beginning of the episode and the ambush of the Viking encampment by the Englishmen. And, of course, the death of the sister of the queen. Here's the thing, right? When we see that happen, we don't know the names of a single goddamn person in that village. We don't even see the actual acts happen of this particular VIP being killed. This is all told to us secondhand through Floki. And this is the thing, right? You might think to yourself, well, this is bad storytelling because we're not being shown it, we're being told it. But that's the point. Floki's telling it to us, and it just shows how pathetic a reason it is, you know, to go to war for. Because it's not important enough for the show to... For the show, that is, the anime, to show us the actual death of this supposedly important person, or even show what they look like. And that reflects Fawz's own thinking. He's not seen it firsthand. He doesn't know who this person is, but he's been asked to abandon everything he's ever worked for over the past 15 years to get on that boat and go killing people just for the fun of it. Indeed, Floki himself says that it's an excuse for war. But that's the thing. The disinterest the show has in giving us this level of detail that we'd normally expect otherwise about this particular person and all the other people at that camp is not an accident, and it's not a flaw as it would be in other stories. It's a deliberate way of aligning the audience's perception of this whole thing with Fawz's, which is, I don't have two fucking clues who those people are, but I'm being called up to fight anyway, and that's what I'm going to have to do for all that. These randoms. That's, again, good editing, good framing, good storyboarding for that purpose. So I really appreciate that. And I'll mention now, because I'm going to set this up for later, but that scene also serves a second purpose in showing war for what it is, which is skullduggery, honorless, tactless, messy. Like, there's no, like, you know, people meeting in the battlefield, like, you know, two armies coming down the side, straight towards each other, glorious one-on-one combat.
The noble, this is, like, pursuit.
Yeah. They murdered half of those Vikings while they were butt-fucking naked. Right. So just bear that in mind when you see the later scenes of what the kids and the older men think of what war is like. This is the opening scene of the show, and it very much shows war for what it is. Wasteful, and, you know, without, you know, rules or conducts or anything like that, it's just wholesale slaughter. So yeah. For an opening scene to the second episode of a series like this, delivering this anti-war message as it does, this was astoundingly effective. And that's effectiveness through, you know, efficiency and through being limited in what it tells us, rather than hitting it on the head with a giant fucking hammer as it otherwise might do. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, 100%. I think, like, if you had any, like, doubts about whether or not this was going to be an anti-war anime, this episode really, like, brings that home. You know, the first one was anti-slavery, you know, taking away, like, the freedom... in a more existential sense of people, and this one is anti-war. And a thing that I enjoyed about the first scene, I actually didn't think about what you said, and that is awesome. I really, really love that point. The thing that that my mind gravitated to was when the blood is shown in the water. It's kind of flowing to, I think one of the last scenes is it's kind of flowing toward a fish.
Yep.
And the fish sort of sees it, sees what it is, and then goes away. And I think, like, what this is saying is that this kind of thing is not natural. And this is what Thor's tries to impart to his child at the end of the episode. We don't have any natural enemies. No one does. Like, this whole business is artificial, and it's what people do who want power and who want land and authority over other people. There's an amazing contrast with that opening scene, you know, the fish fleeing from the blood of the field of combat, and then it cuts to the snowy field where the boys are playing war. You know, someone might say, oh, war is not natural. Like, what are you talking about? You have kids doing it. But, like, here they are learning this behavior. And it recontextualizes, you know, if you watch this episode again, seeing the kids play a war kind of feels pretty grim, you know, because this is where the older ones get their idea of war being this romantic enterprise.
Yeah, you're entirely right. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ben, you said about nature then. Just put that in the back of your mind for a minute, folks, because it's another talking point we'll address in a minute, specifically about that as a concept. But yes, you're absolutely right. The fish indeed reeling back from that is a sign, you know, that this is not natural. It's just, it's a thing that we essentially created for shits and giggles. I mean, the juvenile attitude that the children have towards war in this episode is no different than the juvenile attitude the adults have among Askeladd's group later on.
You're so right.
We are... Yeah, they are essentially the same. But again, I'll put a pin in that because I'm going to talk about their relation to Floki's men as well.
Yeah, that was all I had for that point, was the contrast between war and nature. You know, because there are schools of thought that think like, and they're certainly not fashionable these days, but just that like war, right? It's the most natural thing you could do. Because it's like where man discovers himself and is most alive is on the battlefield. There's a very Gundam Wing bullshit, right? About like, here's where we are like achieving our highest heights as a civilization. And
oh, Solid Snake, I
suppose. It's important. It's important to have these times where like, you know, people can find glory and the high heights of man can be mankind, personkind, humankind can be like reached. Da, 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 all this bullshit, this horseshit from like upper classes to justify war that they themselves are often not involved in. But yeah, this episode is very much no to that.
We haven't even got to the war yet, which is especially strong and in the show's favor. Okay, do you have a point to? I think it's you next up if we're playing.
Well, no, that was me. The nature versus war was me. So I'll toss it back to you.
All right. So let's talk about one of my favorite things to discuss in fiction because I find it a fascinating topic.
Okay.
Nature versus nurture. This is where the nature bit comes in. So, firstly, for you know, establishing my own philosophical viewpoint on this, nurture wins, but nature doesn't, you know, have an influence. And here's the thing, right? Let's look at Force for a moment. He has tried desperately for 15 years and done a pretty good job until this point of, you know, avoiding battle and conflict. But the thing is, as like a figurehead in the village, like, had he not tried to stop the kids from practicing war and having this, you know, attitude towards it, this, you know, romanticized view of it being a truly glorious thing? Bear in mind, after all, that he later argues with Thorfinn about this, and Thorfinn still rejects his approach. And then consider other elements that the episode presents to us. Like you said about Fors, for example, you know, hammering out that iron pot and trying to sort the leak out. But he can't do it because he puts too much strength into it. And as much as this scene is also existing, you know, for the chief...
Oh, man. It's not just for fucking... Like, God. Like, you've got my brain turning and working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Please continue.
So it's not... That scene is not just, you know, for the fan service for the, you know... the heterosexual female audience or the gay, or you know, again, you get my point. It's not just that. It's not just for the cheesecake.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing, right? You know, you see the scars all over Forge's body, that they're the reminders of him as origins as a warrior. And he can't do the hammering, you know, fixing the leak in the pot. And that mean, and then what does that mean for Thorfinn? Like, Thorfinn rejects his notion outright, you know, that there are no enemies. He says you're a liar. He calls him a hypocrite, which you are correct on insofar as, you know, that how do you explain I'm doing this that way, you aren't slaughtered at dawn by these Vikings. But that then begs the question, is Thorfinn simply fated, you know, to be caught in war and consumed by it as his father was and chewed up and spat back out? That's like, I think that's the thing it's trying to explore here. Like, as much as Thor's, like, you know, is trying to fight against the nature of who he is and who his people are, they keep getting sucked back into it. They keep getting dragged back into war, be it, like, you know, just romanticized depictions of it, you know, play fighting, or, you know, all the time that spent in the episode showing all the older adults who will go with him, like, you know, gathering up their goods, and like, I've got my, you know, ceremonial family armor on.
Yeah.
It's got plus 10 to defense, plus 4 to strength, and procs a heal when I get hit. Now, that would be if Vinland Saga was a bad show. Anyway.
Look at this axe. It could cut off a horse's head in one stroke.
Exactly. So I think that that's what the show is trying to express here. And I think that's going to come into play later when Thorfinn grows up. Because, of course, you know, it's like I said in the previous episode about how Fors is kind of like the slave who we met, who he couldn't escape his past. Like, that's why we have these parallels now of people coming by boat. Halfdan came for the slave. Floki comes for Fors. Can he truly escape his past? Can he truly break out from war and stop it from consuming him and the next generation? It's generational, this. So I think the show is starting to dabble in this nature-nurture thing, and it is very clearly showing that, you know, Fors is trying his damnedest to, you know, break out from that and not let it consume the next generation. But it's happening anyway, despite what he tries to do. Thorfinn's got his own ideas, and the kids and, you know, the village and the elder adults, like, they're, you know, they've got their own plans to go to war anyway. All his efforts are fruitless. So the show is asking, can you truly have the will to break away from war and conflict, even if it's embedded in your very DNA? Like, is it part of your person or your soul and something that you might pass down to the next generation without even realizing it?
Yeah, I mean, I asked in chat, like, you know, how culpable is Thor's? Because he very much doesn't seem to discourage at all the playing of war, right? And Leif is also like, you know, Thorfinn, did you get killed again? Oh, that's rough.
Yeah.
And they're like fine with the totally fine with this kid's game, and it would remain a kid's game, except
in fact Fors himself says as much, I think, like, you know, that is a game, like, you know. So he distinguishes between the point in which, you know, it becomes fictionalized to which becomes reality. But is that a strong enough distinction? Is he, you know, letting them get away with it, so to speak? Because it's clearly got into their heads. But then again, he's coming from the position of, you know, someone who was a hero, who has that title. So everyone would see him as kind of a hypocrite in that case. You know, you did glorious things. You became the troll. So, yeah, you became the troll in the, you know, the great Reddit war of 2019. No, sorry, wrong thing. But that's it. Like, you know, who is Fors at this moment? Like, in fact, Ari actually asks that when they're listening on the conversation with Floki. Who is Fors? And that seems like the central question of this actual entire episode. Is he the warrior? Is he the father? Is he the blacksmith's apprentice? Is he the peacemaker? You can say.
Yeah. No, it's a great question. And, you know, I think he himself, he has some deep conviction and deep feelings about that, but it's like you were saying, you know, is that enough to keep it out of his life and his children's lives and, in his village's life? You know, obviously not, right? I mean, you know, Plombo is asking, like, is there anyone else that's anti-war in the village? I mean, and Helga for sure. I mean, I think she knows, but it seems clear to me, at least, and maybe I'm off on this, that neither she nor any of the other women in the village are going to have any kind of influence over the prevailing attitudes. She just very much seems like the kind of woman, whether that's this is by the society's kind of design or her own personality, she's just like, I am with Thor's and I'm behind him, and that's kind of, you know, I take care of my family and that's kind of it. So yeah, but she's, yeah, I think she would, coming from Thor's old life, which I think she did, because I think he sees her in the weird vision that he has while he's still fighting on the ship. So I'm pretty sure she's from his old life, but I could be wrong about that.
I believe that's something that gets more, we get more info about in episode 3, but we'll save that for when we discuss it.
Yeah. So, just showing that I haven't fully finished episode 3. I've only watched partway through it. How culpable is Thor? This is a great question to me. I love that you brought up the point of the parallels between the ship landings of Halfdan and Floki. Because to me, that highlights an aspect of the show that I really like, even though it doesn't even seem like always the most fair thing. It's this depiction, this really ominous depiction of consequences. This world is a world of consequences.
Even 15 years down the line as well, no less.
It's going to cover... It's my favorite thing in some ways about the No Country for Old Men novel. I've not seen the movie, but I've read the book. The book is tremendous, and the antagonist in that, to me, that's just he's my reading of him is he is the consequences. He is coming for the man that took the money, no matter what. And so, yeah, and you have and it doesn't always seem right because you could definitely easily argue that Thor's leaving the Navy was this good thing. He's not going to be killing people anymore, which is a big A++. Would buy again, 100% rating, thumbs up.
That's admittedly quite low bar to clear.
I know.
Good on him.
And he helps make these other people's lives better in the village. You know, he raises his son in a much more caring environment. You would think that these will be very good things. But we don't really know anything about his original choice to join, or I don't know. We don't know about how he joined the Navy. If he joined, if he was conscripted, we think he was conscripted, but either way, he took part in all this killing and tried to leave it behind, but the consequences of that are catching up to him now. And,
yep.
I just really, really like that. I don't really have anything more to say about it, except that I like that about this world that they have made, that it is one of consequences. It makes me, in a way, feel just, I don't know, like a lot of...
Scope.
Yeah, there's the scope. And then there's, and it makes me feel like maybe that there won't be loose ends that bother me. characters not... Things not coming back around to pay off, or characters having to pay for things. You know what I mean? I worry about that in fiction, but it seems that consequences are a big deal in this world.
Indeed. Do you have another talking point, Doc?
Maybe, but why don't you go ahead?
All right. I have one more that I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
And this is, again, I'm going to be comparing Halfdan's group who arrived in the previous episode to Floki's group arriving in this one. So, we already discussed at length in the previous episode how Halfdan's group were still a bunch of thugs despite operating under the veneer of, respect of the law and the rule of order and all that. The things that he was preaching about. And then we get, the Illuminati, as you say.
The Illuminati.
And... they, of course, visually they're disciplined, they're organized, they're militarized. They don't, kick off with any of the villagers on the shore as they do in the previous, as Halfdan's group do in the previous episode. So we see, paradoxically, believe it or not, a group of soldiers who are more aligned with Halfdan's ideals than his own men, mm-hmm. Would you believe it or not? But here's the thing, though. We recognize them as the audience, as villains, as antagonists, because we see them being lined up, to massacre the village if Thor's declines, which is, as far as I can tell, the reason he ultimately accedes to Floki's request. And this is the point that I'm going to make here, which is that it doesn't matter what, veneer of respectability you come under, be it that you come under, a leader who, eschews the, like, you know, the virtue of order and the virtue of law, or if you come under a military commander like Floki, and that you have the accoutrements, like the helmets, the symbols, you know, the military elements to it, you know, it doesn't matter, as far as Vinland Saga is concerned, what way you present yourself. If you're operating under an end to, you know, ultimately intimidate and cross, you know, moral ethical lines and treat people badly to the point where you will threaten someone to go to war, a pointless, you know, pissing contest of a war, if I'm being quite blunt. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter how you dress yourself, how you present yourself. In the end of the day, the thing that determines if you are, you know, evil, to use a weak, kind of weak term, but it's one I've got handy at the moment,
right,
is your ultimate actions and your ultimate intent. Dress yourself however you want. It's your actions that speak louder than that. And both Halfdan and Floki have proven to themselves, to us thus far, that they don't mean well for anyone, not apart from themselves, but even though they come in very different stripes and operate a little differently. So I really appreciate that as well, that again, we've got comparison points, not just in terms of what it means for, you know, Fawz, but also it just means in general about how you operate as a person, that helmets are no, fuggery are no, chains are no. Like, you know, the end result is what counts for determining your moral, you know, standard and, you know, how you conduct yourself.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. I have a question for you.
Hit me.
So, why... Like, what do you think is happening with Thorfinn when he is beating the shit out of those other kids and breaking that one kid's arm? Like,
well,
what's going on in
did
his
have,
brain?
I did have a thought on this, and I should have brought up a second point, but anyway. Okay, so here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. We get two scenes of Thorfinn fighting the kids in a play fight, one before Floki's arrival and one after when he's listened. And the distinction between those two is his behaviour. When he dies, quote-unquote, in the first one, he's done. Like, he sits down, he lies in the snow, he plays by the rules. In the second one, after he realises that there's actually a real war on the horizon that he, in at least his head, believes he can join or get into, the rule set playing stops. He doesn't stop fighting, or probably would not stop fighting, until he was literally dead right there and then. Thorfinn, believe it or not, of all the characters we meet apart from Fawz himself, who I'm referring specifically to the male characters who are getting involved in this whole war, you know, romanticism, he's probably got the right idea more than any of them about how to approach war, which is that it's, you know, a question of survival, fighting to the last end, fighting till you breathe your last breath. And I'm not saying this is a good thing, by the way. He's a fucking six-year-old kid. But he probably has the most mature understanding of war of any of them, which is that the rules don't matter. You fight until you win, and you fight until, you know, you're the last man standing. And I think that's the distinction there between that, that now he's fully trying to embrace the idea of being that kind of warrior, rather than operating on all this naivete that all the others have. Which, again, when a six-year-old kid is the one person in this entire village, apart from Fawz, who has the best handle on warfare, fuck does that say? But it also, again, speaks back to the nature-nurture thing I suggested, which is that, you know, is Thorfinn now, you know, similarly awakening in that kind of warrior himself, where he will just, you know, callously and cruelly just break a child's arm because it's war and there are no rules in war.
Yeah, that's a really cool distinction, and one I didn't think about. I think my mind was kind of going to where Big Bang's hurt was, that, like, he was trying to really push himself because he just found out his father was a hero, the troll, the warrior, and
I think that plays
coming.
A part, certainly.
I also think he's, like, I would like to think he's, like, confused, you know? Like, that he is, I don't know, maybe I'm attributing more kind of teenageness and angstness to him, but, like, just things I was thinking about is, like, again, I think I mentioned this earlier, but, like, having that man as your dad, who everyone says is a hero, but he's not excited about war at all, like, why not? And, like, why didn't you tell me you were a warrior? Like, kind of just a lot of it seems like there's going to be some conflict that he's getting out on the battlefield just by on other people on the battlefield, on the play battlefield, by, you know, via aggression and just hurting people.
Well, let me just fire back a question to you then, Dot, because you're more equipped to answer this than I am. You yourself are a father, I believe. Am I?
You believe. You know I. Yes, correct.
So from your perspective as a father, and this might be a bit personal, so if you don't answer, don't bother, that's fine. But do you think there is a way one can explain the situation that Fawz is in to a son of his age and have it sink in rather than being disregarded out of hand? Is there any way we can truly, you know, elaborate that to someone as young as him and impressionable as him?
That war, how awful war is?
Yeah.
I don't think it's... I don't think it's fully possible, because their brains are still developing and growing. I don't think that they're going to be able to have the fully fleshed out concepts of it that we do. But I think, especially at the end, you know, Thor's was doing the right things. You know, telling him that these weapons are not toys, that they're instruments of war, and look, they make me bleed. And you don't, then there's no reason for anyone to kill or fight anyone. I think that certainly he could have done a better job before now, but, you know, that's him. I mean, I guess he was just kind of lax and not thinking, like, well, hey, they're never going to find me. We'll never have to talk about this. This is a part of my past I can leave behind. But you're going to say, why still keep the chest of weapons, right?
Exactly. And I think that maybe, you know, Fawz is, by doing that, is accepting that there may always be a potential for conflict, but it's a question of being vigilant for it and not seeking it out,
mm-hmm.
rather than the agenda that the Vikings have, which is, oh, some random woman got murdered on bath time on Sunday or Saturday morning, you know, before she got to watch Antiques Roadshow. Let's go to war and kill them all. You know, completely stain England with blood because of one thing. And by the way, I'm not just saying, by the way, that there's never a time for retribution or reprisal when things like that happen.
Right.
But, well, Floki himself said that it was an excuse. So, while of course, admittedly, you might find the idea of trusting a man named Floki insofar as what he says a bit suspect, you know, I think we could take it on face value that he's probably got an accurate appraisal of how the king feels, actually. I just wanted to pillage England all the time, and now I've got a reason to. Hell yeah!
Mm-hmm. An interesting jumping to an earlier scene. An interesting part that I really liked was when, what was the boy's name? Was it Faki that got killed before Thorfinn did in the first game? He was lying on the ground.
Something like, mm-hmm. I know the one you're referring to though, yeah.
Yeah, so he's lying on the ground with this boy and the boy is talking about Valhalla. This, by the way, opens up a whole other can of worms, how like religion being used to like further the agenda, right, of war. And
anyone ever heard of the Crusades?
Right, yeah. Or like, I mean, just all kind. There's all kinds of instances in all kinds of religions of, you know, motivating, particularly men, to violence, with these sort of rewards in the afterlife, and or even here now, right? Just religious rewards. And so the kid is like, Valhalla, it's going to be so good. I get so much meat. You know, it's one big banquet hall. Me and Odin and the Valkyries hanging out.
It's the all-you-can-eat buffet, yeah. And they've got plenty of shrimp going.
And so Thorfinn is lying there and says, like, it's not that simple. You have to, like, be a great warrior and die in battle. And that makes him think, like, about his sister and his mom, like, what about them? What happens if they die in war? Like,
doesn't give an answer to that part.
He doesn't. I mean, there's other afterlife shenanigans in Norse mythology, but I thought this was an interesting point of maybe like a seed planting in his mind about how just the kind of shitty nature of war and unfairness. Even looking at it through a religious prism, you have like, wow, like. the dudes who are warriors get all this good shit, but I really care about my mom and I really care about my sister. Like, what's going to happen to them? And it moves on pretty quickly from that, but I really like that it took like a moment to kind of like reflect on that. The show did. That was super cool. Also, Leaf, right? You'd think Leaf had seen some shit. I guess he's really been on adventures. Maybe he hasn't really been a part of war, but he seems to like, he's a sympathetic listening ear to Thor's, but he's not like, oh my God, guys, war is so bad. What are you doing? Maybe it's because he's an outsider and he doesn't feel it's his place. But I found that to be also interesting that he didn't really, he wasn't out there beating the anti-war drum.
No. He was sympathetic to Thor's viewpoint, but ultimately offered no, backing up thereof.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. But yeah, I am otherwise out of talking points thus far for this episode, but fucking woo, that's a lot to think about. And we're only two in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Jesus. Do you have any more you want to add, Doc?
No, that's all. I think that's all that I have. I will elaborate on one really quickly and say that speaking about consequences of the Jorm's Vikings coming up and conscripting Thor as consequences for murder, I don't know if this entirely pokes a hole in my theory or I just want to reinterpret the first one. You know, Halfdan coming to collect his slave, you know, like, I'm glad that that man died before Halfdan collected him. And that he, yeah, I guess, like, he was saved because he passed away before he had to go back, and he got the wonderful kind of idyllic vision put in his head.
The Lenny send-off of mice and men.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Think of the rabbits in the farm, George.
Yeah.
That's the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, maybe these are but I don't want to be like, the consequences were coming for the slave. Because, I mean, it's a good thing that he left, but I don't know. Maybe these are like, I don't know. There's definitely a distinction to be made there. And I don't want to, I don't want to say the wrong thing and equate these two things that don't need to be equated.
Well, the thing to note about consequences you describe them, though, is that that doesn't necessarily mean that the consequences for either of them are justified.
Yep.
Like, yes. Mm-hmm. The people coming after them, both Halfdan and Floki, as I've said, both clearly have their own, like, you know, entirely selfish, entirely reprehensible agendas.
Yeah.
Consequences as a term, in this case, is just a neutral thing. It's just a reaction to something that happened previously.
Not a cosmic, you know, Yeah,
but it doesn't mean that endorses such consequences.
Yeah, no, Plumbo's totally right. Yeah, that's absolutely what happened. Mm-hmm. I just did not want to give the wrong impression. But yeah, Thor's really heroic, kind of super ethical, principled action is what did that and stopped the. What would have been extremely unjust, situation befalling that man. And I guess the fact that there is no one there to trade sheep for Thor's, maybe is a way to differentiate them. Like, there's no one to save Thor's, you know, he's got to pay for, what he has done in his past life, maybe. But we'll see. We'll see. Okay. Do you want to rate the episode?
I certainly do. I certainly do. So, again, like, we're only two episodes at this point, but I am genuinely quite taken aback by how strong and how well delivered the anti-war message is in this show, when war hasn't even really happened yet. Like, I've seen anti-war messages in a lot of other shows elsewhere that we've covered, like, say, for example, Macross. But actually articulating even before it happens is even though in the same vein the show shows how useful that can sometimes be, especially with young impressionable people. But articulating as well as it does this early on is a real accomplishment. And the show, again, continues to do great stuff with editing and storyboarding. You've got, like, you know, again, the visual metaphor of Thor showing how scarred he is when he's hammering the iron, that being the metaphor then for, you know, him not being able to, you know, escape his nature, that he has always been a warrior and always will be, whether he believes it or not, whether he's in self-denial. The framing I mentioned of the opening scene and how that, you know, shows the ugliness of actual conflicts and wars and just the plain slaughter of it, versus then the contrast later of the children having their very organized, very rule-driven game. Even little things like when Thor's is talking with Floki, and then Floki makes his ultimatum, a little ember, you know, jumps out of it and jumps into Thor's mead, which he drinks, like,
yeah,
kind of symbolizing his acceptance of the fires of war that are coming, that he's going to have to, you know, undergo that and throw himself into those flames once again, as much as he otherwise would not like to. And I'm just genuinely blown away. So without really much, hesitation, I will happily give this episode 5 out of 5 Viking Longbows. Absolute masterpiece of solid storytelling, solid anti-war message, great framing. The character behavior in the drama is exceptional. As you said, that scene between him and Fors and Thorfinn, you know, when he's trying to explain about, you know, he just immediately demolishes the idea of, you know, a fetishism for war itself, like, you know, the enemy, quote unquote, a lesson that we can all still agree with is relevant even today. I can think of no real flaws with this episode whatsoever. It nailed it, hit it out of the park for me. The only thing I am worried about, and this is something that's going to have to be proved out, is that I don't want it to turn out that Floki was just tricking Thors into leaving the village. I want it to turn out that the actual call to war was genuine.
Right.
Because otherwise, that then undercuts what's going on here, that, you know, suddenly Thors was never actually in danger of being brought back into war by the consequences of the past. It was just a gambit to get him out there so he could be assassinated. I want that still to have been a genuine offer, even if then nothing comes of it. But that's all I have to say that could potentially go against this episode. Otherwise, absolutely immaculate from start to finish.
Awesome. Well, this is going to be a rare moment.
Oh man!
And not because I have.
Right, that's it. That's it. Right, that's going in the charity pot, folks. £5 for the rare moment when a doc actually rates something lower than me. Holy shit!
I know. Well, like
the question now is the degree of which you're going to do that. So you know, drop me some hot figures, motherfucker.
Okay, not by much, right? I mean, because I don't really have any major problems with the episode. I mean, I think it's pretty technically proficient. We talked about thematically, it's, you know, just a heavyweight puncher. It is, we got the character building stuff. It's really great. I just think emotionally, I'm not to the 5 out of 5 yet. It hasn't, like, really put its talons in me. It hasn't.
Well,
like,
it's entirely okay for you to be wrong.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Just carry on.
It's not like
I kid.
It's not like wowing me deeply, but I am gonna give it 4.5 out of.
Oh,
5.
Do you mean 5.4? I think it's wrong way around.
No, I had to draw it backwards. So this is me writing 4.5 backwards. Leaky metal bowls out of 5.
excellent. Before we wrap up, I'm going to very quickly just revisit the polls I put up. Links to them are in the chat, but do feel free to check out our Twitter account as well. Two serious ones this week. I didn't really think of any jokey ones because I think I've all jokes out in the cast, unless, you know, I want to pop up another one saying, you know, did which forum did Thor's frequent? Was it 4 or 8chan? I'm presuming it was 4.
I have one. How about
Thor's chan?
God damn it. I would do a poll that was just nature or nurture.
I think I've already covered down the polls as it happens.
Oh, okay.
I've already covered that.
Hit me.
So, first poll. Vinland Saga, episode 2, poll 1. Is Thor's making the right decision to go to war at Floki's request in order to save the village? 33% say yes and 67% say no this far. Ooh. That he's making a mistake. A sentiment I would lean towards agreeing with, but, well, I think he's in the ultimate catch-22 here, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the alternative is just to let them try and slaughter his village. But anyway. And then the next one, Vinland Saga Episode 2, poll number 2. Can those who have returned from war ever truly escape its effects? Can history be truly left behind? And we currently have a clean sweep here. 100% say no.
Okay.
No. Flat out no. Don't happen. Period. There'll always be that little bit that sticks with you after the facts.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, thank you very much for taking part in the polls thus far. Those who have done so, feel free to have a look at them if you've not. They will be up for the next week, so drop your thoughts in on those.
Where can people find you, Mr. Don, if they want to hang out with you and talk about Vinland Saga and other things?
Well, you can find me at the local mead hall working my way through the next set of honey mead. You know, I mean, that real roast suckling pick. No, I'm kidding, of course. No mead halls, unfortunately, in Manchester that I know of, although I will certainly be doing some research into that soon. But in the meantime, until I find that place, you can, of course, find me at Shaden1010 on Twitter. Feel free to follow me, ask me any hot deets or hot, you know, bants that you want to give my way. But of course, if you do want to talk to me directly, you can always, of course, become a patron and therefore join us in Discord, where you can just ask me anything you want in more real-time fashion. And of course, that gets you plenty of other benefits as well, such as more access to content, including our ongoing stream of thoughts, or second stream, as we've called on Given. Yes. Which so far is looking also to be really, really good this season. So that's certainly one way you can do it. But as always, my Twitter is always open.
You're welcome, Sophie. It was our pleasure. You can find me on Twitter at The Subtle Doctor. And as Shadon said, you can, if you want to support us and also get access to more content that we're doing, and Vorgalia will soon be joining us in doing, both on the free side and on the behind the paywall, you can subscribe over at patreon.com/waruidesho, WARUIDESHOU. That's our Twitter handle, and if you search for us on Google, you'll find us on anything. Please rate, subscribe, follow, all that jazz. That all helps us tremendously. And this week, for additional content we've got coming up, I am going to be dropping a solo, not quite essay, but I don't know what to call it, because I'm not like fully writing a script, but I have a detailed outline that I'm going to be going off of to talk about a comic I've just gotten into called The Radioactive Spider-Gwen, and got some thoughts on the first set of issues, volume zero, which is collects the first set of issues from that series. And we've, as Shadon said, we've got our second podcast on the anime Given. You can come into our Discord if you're a patron and talk to us about that stuff. You can ask us questions about Vinland Saga or Given that we will have to answer no matter how ridiculous or no matter how much research it takes. We'll have to give a detailed answer on stream.
Can ask us who's hot or falls off Loki.
Exactly. Yes. I would love a kind of that kind of question. That's the kind of content I crave as a listener. So, but yeah, thank you so much, folks out there that are patrons. We do appreciate it so much. Like Shadon said, it floored me.
Indeed. Thank you.
And I know there's plenty of people that still listen that are not, and you're valid. God damn it. And we love you too. So
it's
much.
True. It's absolutely true.
So thanks everybody for hanging out. Thank you folks in the chat for making it fun as usual. Shadon, thank you. This has been a real pleasure, as it always is.
And likewise to you, my friend.
And everyone out there, as we say every week, and we truly do mean, embrace each other, everyone, to the ends of the universe.
Good night.